So we got a special guest for tonight, Ted. Who's who do we got joining us?
Dennis Superman Hallman, former UFC fighter, actually had a long and storied career. He's the only guy to ever submit Matt Hughes twice. He now manages and trains fighters. Well, I don't know if he manages per se, but he definitely trains and corners fighters out of Washington State. So and there was an incident in India that happened recently, and so we're gonna go through all that with him and talk about what the UFC was like when he was there and what it is now and all the differences. And so I'm really excited for it.
Yeah. Oh.
There it goes.
It's trying. The video is trying.
It's got me.
All right, man. Hey, we'll just roll forward, and then if the video comes in later, that's cool. But, Dennis, great to have you. And for those out there who don't know who Dennis Hallman is, I can't imagine that people don't. But anyway, for the new people new to the sport, you've been fighting for a long, long time. And you fought in the UFC and a billion other organizations. You're the only guy to ever submit Matt Hughes twice. You were on The Ultimate Fighter as part of Team Tate. And most recently, there was something that went down in India with one of your fighters. Hannah, is it Kampf or Kampf?
It's Hannah Kampf. Not my fighter, but she was a U.S. fighter, and so I was cornering her.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I thought maybe she was with Victory Athletics, your academy in Washington State. But
she's from Montana.
Oh, okay. So you were cornering her at SFL, which is the Super Fight League in India, and she was fighting Asha Roka. She went for Hannah went for a takedown. Just to set this up, Hannah went for a takedown. Asha sank in a guillotine from bottom, pushed off the cage, and rolled over and got mount with the guillotine still sunk in. And then tell us what happened from there.
Asha got a pretty tight guillotine, and Hannah, instead of defending the guillotine right away, she finished the takedown. And so she was actually choked unconscious before she even hit the ground. So as Asha was rolling her over, she was already choked unconscious. And I noticed it pretty much immediately. I was like, okay, she's out. So I started waiting for the referee to stop the fight. And that's when the time started slowing down for me. Seconds started seeming like minutes. I'm sure a lot of people, the video was pretty widespreadly shared. They saw that the referee just didn't see what was happening. I don't think he missed some protocol. He's actually a good referee normally. He just had a bad match, and he was missing.
Shocking.
Yeah, I mean, he had the worst match a referee's had in the history of refereeing. So, but yeah. Still, he's not a bad referee. I've seen him make a lot of good calls. Mm-hmm. He just had a bad call that time, unfortunately on live TV, and it's one of those things. But he just missed protocol. He didn't check the arm. The free hand. He didn't look at the feet and see how they were acting. He didn't, most of the time when someone's getting choked in the guillotine, they grab the arm that's on their neck, and she wasn't doing any of that. And so he also wasn't positioned to see her face. She should have changed his position too. The cage was in the way, but still, you can step around. I think that he just, it's one of those things that can happen to a referee. They get too relaxed. And they forget that, people's lives are in their hands.
Yeah. So you threw in the towel, right? That's what happened next when you realized that the ref was...
The protocol, sorry, is to step up onto the apron, and that's what's supposed to stop in an MMA bout. It's what's supposed to stop the bout. If you can see me in the back, I'm on the apron. Like, from when the video already is showing, I'm already on the apron because she was already out. And then I threw the towel... And my mind was working so fast before the towel even hit the ground, I was over the fence just because it was taking too long to hit the ground. I was starting to panic. So
right. So you got over the top of the fence? I forget now. I watch the video today, but you went over the top of the fence?
Yeah.
Okay. I don't imagine that would be. How would that happen in I've never seen that. I don't know if I've ever seen that happen in the United States. Like that just, I can't imagine that scenario where anyone would have to do that. That you would have to jump over the cage.
You know, I don't know if the scenario was set up any different than, I mean, the fights and the commission there was set up the same as they do in Washington State. You know, so it's just a matter of, you know, I think that one of the problems was, is like in America, you can hear what's going on, like, fairly well around the cage. You know, if someone's screaming, then a referee can hear you. But over there, they had, like this music playing in the background, these huge bongo drums and stuff. You couldn't hear anything. So as I'm yelling, the referee, he didn't have a chance to hear me. No, so it was, maybe that was the difference, is that he couldn't hear anything either outside the cage.
So I got to ask you this, man, you know, you watch the crime shows and stuff like that. You see people get strangled and they pass out and die. I mean, how long do you have to really choke someone for something really significant like that to actually happen?
Well, you know, for somebody to die, like brain death is like, I believe 3 minutes without blood to the brain.
Okay,
and,
so that's a while.
You know, 5 minutes to actually die. So it's a long time. But, you know, the first thing to go when your body starts to fight is, you know, starts shutting down organs. You know, it's fight for blood for the brain. And, you know, you lose control of your bodily functions. And the girl actually, she peed herself. You didn't see that, but you know, she had no control over it. But, that's why if you watch the entire video, I throw the white flag around her back.
Okay. That's
so people can't see that at the immediate moment. But you know, I didn't really think about how significant it was at the moment. But that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah, and you saved the night.
You know, I just trained what I was doing, what I was trained to do. I guess I don't know. You're a fighter, and you know when someone goes out. You know, I've done this for 21 years. And so, you know, I would hope somebody would do the same thing for me. And I don't know if it's saving the night, but maybe it's just, that's what we would all do for each other, right?
Yep. I'd say so.
So Dennis, I mean, how would you describe the MMA, where they are in mixed martial arts in India, like compared to the United States, you know, where we've been, you know, the UFC has been around since 1993. Are they, you know, way behind us as far as education for refs? You know, does Big John need to go over there and do a seminar or something? Or where are they at with all that?
See, Big John, I mean, there's commissions in the U.S. that could use Big John's help. You know, he's a fantastic referee. But the commission there is not let's say it's, they know what the commission, actually the elected officials, they're pretty knowledgeable. They know what they're doing. They know what to call. They know the rules. The referees, like I said, the referee, that guy, he's one of the best referees in India. I probably is the best referee in India. If I had to pick somebody to ref my fight, I'd pick him. But he made the biggest blunder he could possibly make on for the whole world to see. So no one's going to, you know, no, he's not going to get any slack from, you know, his performance. People are going to say he's the worst ref ever, but you know, it happens. But those referees definitely need seminars. They need to work more bouts, I think is what it is. You know, in America, we have amateur fights. Fights are every weekend, all the time. You know, so those referees get a lot of work. Whereas the guys over there, you know, they've refereed probably less than 50 bouts each, you know, which is not very many. And so it's experience-wise for the officials, they need to work more, for sure.
Okay.
But the fans over in India are probably the greatest fans you've ever seen. Like, it reminds me of a high school basketball game. Like, yeah. They have cheerleader guys that run back and forth, throwing their hands up in the air.
Really?
They're crazy. You know, in America, the production makes the signs for the people, for the fans. You know, when they're trying to show something to make it look like it's exciting, it's not really the fans that are making those signs. Not most of them. It's production. At least it was when they were coming through. You know, when you get the close-up stuff, even in football, they do that. But these fans, these fools will make, like, they watch you one fight, and they're, like, super fans of you the rest of the tournament. I mean, it was pretty interesting to see some of these American fans, these Indian guys would write their names on the sign. you know, Patrick Benson, you're the greatest, and hold this little sign up. It's pretty, pretty interesting.
Oh, that's great. Was that your first time ever over there for the SFL?
No, see, the original, the SFL that's hired now is actually the second owners of the original SFL. I went over there in 2012 and taught the first group of fighters in India. That was like SFL 1, 2, and 3. I taught a camp there for 3 months. And then that's what I did again this time. They brought me over for 7 weeks prior to the season to try to get the fighters caught up with, like, trying to get them, you know, a little bit more more knowledgeable and a little bit more comfortable with fighting foreign fighters. And you know, the fighters are the ones that work hard, they do well. The ones that didn't work hard, you know, they got a group of, you know, 90 fighters, and maybe 30 of them worked hard. The others that were learning how to work hard still, but the ones that they worked hard, they did well.
So you ran this kind of this boot camp for all the fighters that were going to fight in the SFL season.
So all of the Indian fighters, not the foreign fighters.
Okay. Okay. So,
and then the group of foreign fighters from America that came over, they were people that I had that I knew from the Northwest. And so, you know, that those most of the fighters from America were from the Northwest. I helped procure them to compete.
So I've never been there. I don't really know what it's like over there, but I'm sure that you've went to go, you know, at one of the gyms. What is it like? You know, what's really different between a gym there and, you know, over here in the States?
So if I was to make a comparison, the U.S. would be like having a doctorate, you know, graduated from college with a doctorate, and India would be like still struggling to graduate kindergarten.
Okay, yeah, because I spoke with a fighter that's over there in that area, and he was trying to explain it to me as well as he can without making it sound like they weren't experienced at all. But he was saying, like, you know, we don't have much experienced guys to really train us over here. So what do you think they need to do to, you know, step it up?
They need to do exactly what they did with me, you know, bring in guys, like foreign guys to help coach these teams and you know, it's no one's going to jump in, you know, like the analogy I use, a kindergarten is not going to jump in and compete with a doctor, you know, in anything. And, you know, what something impressive was that Asha Roka girl. You know, she was a ranked boxer. I think she was ranked like 13th in boxing, and just a phenomenal athlete. And, you know, most of those girls that she competed against were pretty green. Hannah Kampf actually is a tough girl. She made her pro debut there and was and won her first two fights. But that was I was impressed by how Asha did in comparison. And there was a couple of guys like Isaac Mahayu. He looked pretty good. You know, a couple of decent Indian fighters that performed well. That were impressive. And but you know what makes guys better is mat time. And the more mat time you have, the better you're going to get. And, you know, I think Jeff Blatnick said it well. If you can't fight on the ground, you can't fight. And so these guys need to realize that, you know, they need to spend their hours, because a lot of them have a lot of most of them have a lot of experience striking, but not a lot of experience on the ground. And, you know, they spend most of their time. So if I was their coach, I'd be making them spend most of their time learning ground fighting. Whereas the coaches that they do have, they are striking-based guys, most of them. And so the guys aren't getting the mat time that they need to get better.
Well, that's interesting you say that, Dennis, because I thought Indians had a long history of wrestling. I thought there's a
cushy wrestling mud. I went and did that. So it was pretty interesting. It's just like a freestyle wrestling match in the mud. But you know, like how American wrestling and Russian wrestling is pretty widespread through the community. It's probably because we don't wrestle in the mud. So even the Indians, not all of them want to get dirty, you know? So the wrestling that they do have is, you know, it's filthy. So.
Another thing that really interests me, man, is what's going on over there with the female fighters? Do any of their beliefs kind of crash with or get in the way with, you know, performing or anything? Because I know that some of them can't show their faces. They have to wear the cloths. I mean, is it developed over there?
That's probably
That's more Middle East.
That's not in India, man. Like, I've seen more people in America with the face masks on. You know, the Muslim chicks did more of that stuff than I have in India.
Oh wow.
Like Pakistan.
Yeah, there's Hindus over there.
Pakistan is where most of Muslims went. Like and Pakistan seceded from India. That's why they're at war with each other. It's over territory like that. But most of the Muslims went to Pakistan. I think it's like 14% of the population is Muslim over there, whereas like 80% is Hindi. So, you know, it's the girls thing is, it is kind of strange. They're like every little, because they're all about security there. Like you go into a public place, you got to go through a metal detector or whatever. And the girls have their own little metal detector and they go inside some little dark, like closed off area to get patted down. Whereas the guys just walk in the line and get patted down normally.
Wow.
Well, there's some weirdness there, but it's not too awkward. You know, it's the third world though, so when you're over there, you definitely realize that we're blessed to be in America.
You mentioned the ground game and how important it is, Dennis, and you should know you've got 41 submissions to your credit. How did you get your start? I think you started off as a wrestler, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, see, like, but then you don't realize there's not
jiu-jitsu.
Yeah, no, it's not even that. It's wrestling. What people don't realize is where American wrestling came from. It came from catch wrestling. That's where we're the only country in the world that does folk style wrestling, which is ground based wrestling. Our wrestling that we do in collegiate is based from catch wrestling, and we're basically, and then jujitsu guys, it's the same thing, except for they're like the guys that got taken down. And so they learn how to do their grappling off their back, and the catch wrestling guys want to do the takedowns. And so they grappled off the top, and that's the American base. So when
Explain
I started,
that for people. What's catch wrestling for those who don't know?
Catch wrestling is, so up until the 1936 Olympics, right? You were allowed to do submissions in wrestling. So that explains it more. It's just over the last 100 years or years that they eliminated the submissions. So all wrestling is, if you look at it from, this is how I approached it when I started in MMA, is I was suddenly allowed to do all of the moves that were called illegal for me all my life growing up. Now all the illegal moves are legal and I can't be pinned. So that's the way I approached it. And, it just all made sense to me. So I was able to, you know, at 19, 20 years old, compete with guys that had been doing jiu-jitsu for quite a while, not because I was some jiu-jitsu phenom. It was just because I approached the sport of grappling, you know, from a standpoint of I'd rather be on top, but you know, I can't be pinned and it's just wrestling and everything is illegal is now legal.
And were there any catch wrestling guys that you learned from, you know, like you hear about guys like Billy Robinson and Lou Thesz, and were there any guys that, or Carl Gotch, any guys that you came in contact with like that, old style wrestlers? So,
yeah, if you look through the lineage, like Matt Hume went over to Japan and learned some from those guys, those catch wrestler guys that learned from the name catch wrestlers. And I worked with him, you know, he really helped me understand the hip positioning, you know, the correct hip positioning better. I picked it right up, but it was the little things that he taught me, not necessarily big moves, but actually concepts and fundamentals that he helped me understand. And it really, grappling, that's really what it is. Everybody knows all the different moves. But if you understand the concepts and the fundamentals, the concepts of when to use the moves and how they affect you and the percentages of the sport, like high risk, low percentage moves, you want to stick to those. Understanding what each move is, that's the key to grappling. Josh Barnett and I, Josh is a big known catch wrestler, but we're from the same, learn the same style from the same guy.
Oh, that's true. He started with Matt Hume as well, and then I guess later on hooked up with Eric Paulson.
Yep.
And now Josh, I heard Josh has split off and he's doing his own thing.
I'm sure he is. I mean, he's a talented kid. He can do it. He could do his own thing for sure.
So a lot of our viewers and listeners that are tuning in right now, probably remember you from that season of Ultimate Fighter as well. What was that experience like for you, man? I mean, was this your first time really around like the production of a TV set and all that, like kind of behind the scenes?
I mean, I guess from like a reality show was, but I had been around, you know, a lot of the guys. They did the IFL and I've been in a lot of the little spinoffs that they tried to that never really made it big of MMA reality, I guess, reality based. There was something called Valor that they tried to do some reality thing out of. So it wasn't my first, but it was the first major production I was around. But it was no different than you know, we've been fighting around TV cameras and doing interviews and all that our whole career, so it wasn't a different than anything we'd already done.
And so what happened with you got to tell us for those who don't know, who didn't see the footage, the whole thing with you and Edmund Tarverdian, aka Count Chocula.
Yeah, that guy was real weird. So he I came there and Brian Caraway is a good friend of mine. They told me that the guy that I before I got there, he was trying to like pick a fight with Brian. Well, I show up there and the guy kept looking at me like I don't know, like I was dating his mom. And of course he's looking at me. I'm like, hey, stare hard, retard. He's like, I think they caught a little glimpse of it, but he's the guy that I call like a background tough guy. He's like the guy at the bar that will be, you know, if you bump into him and he starts screaming real loud, come on, why'd you bump into me? So everybody hears him, you know, so he doesn't get beat up. That's kind of how the Edmund guy is. He's loud and wants to be, you know, make sure everybody notices him so he doesn't get his ass kicked in private. So I told him, like, he was talking about how he was going to do whatever he was going to do. And so I didn't think that to this day, I know we wouldn't have got in trouble if we would have went there and I would have beat his ass in the cage. No one would have said anything. We're two grown men. We get in a cage and whether it's, during a live bout or not, no one's going to get in trouble. Grumpy little Rhonda, she wanted to make her little show of it, whatever. But,
right. She kind of white lighted in there, you know, she got in your face and she just, I don't know. I wasn't impressed with that. You know what I mean? But it was totally her persona.
That guy let a girl talk for him. The guy let a girl talk for him. I mean, what kind of panty waste does that? Right. Oh, I'm going to let my girl coach go and stand in my way. You want to know if Misha ever tried to do that to me? I'd be like, Misha, you better sit down. I'd knock the shit out of this guy. You know?
Yeah, she was just hanging back, letting you handle your business.
Yeah, I mean, Misha and Brian, they lived in my backyard for 2 years. So they know mm-hmm. that I'm not like a... Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you're gonna talk the talk, you gotta walk the walk. That's kind of like the way that I was raised, and that's the way that, you know, it's a matter of principle. You would never see me do the things that he did and not throw down. You know, I'm not gonna ask somebody or tell somebody I'm gonna call them later. Who does that? You know, oh, I'm gonna fight you later, later on outside. Like, why even say anything if you're gonna do it? You know, but it is what it was. The guy was a pussy.
Made for some good TV though.
Yeah, that guy's not very popular anymore, is he?
Only for his head movement.
How about you tell that girl who's a world-class judo to clinch? How about that?
Clinch!
How about walk across the ring and grab the boxing girl's hand and then take her down, Rhonda, instead of standing there getting sucked in the mouth? But, I don't know. I my personal opinion on that fight is if Rhonda fought her again, that Rhonda would beat her, just because if she had a coach that taught her that taught her how to do the zombie style, walk across the ring, grab the girl that's punching her in the face with arms instead of standing in front of her, how about you just keep walking towards somebody? It's illegal to clinch in boxing because nobody can box if you clinch them, you know. So instead of standing in front of somebody, let them hit you. How about you grab them? They're gonna hit you one time before you can grab them, unless you're, you know, extra on the handicap channel.
Oh, so you think if she fought Nunes again, she would win?
Yeah, man. If she did what she did in her early fights, like when she'd like lead with her butt and then grab people instead of trying to stand in front of them and do what she's not good at doing, you know, she's not a striker, dude. How about you? See, the thing that people don't realize is if somebody wants to grapple you, the striker can't stop it from happening. You know, it's illegal to clinch in boxing because you can't box when somebody clinches you. You know, you can't. It stifles the game. Everybody can do that in MMA. They don't do it because, you know, people like to throw bombs, I guess. But if you're fighting somebody who is that much, you know, superior to you at striking, why in the world would you stand in front of them? Well, the only way you're gonna get knocked out is if you stand in front of somebody when they're throwing punches at you. And you know.
Yeah, so, I guess you just fell in love with her hands.
He did, man, and I still think that she's better. That she would, you know, if she gets anybody on the ground, that girl's gonna beat, you know, 99% of the people. But you know, forget what got you there, then I guess nobody's gonna help you. Especially when you got some fake boxing guy telling you that you're, you know, world class. Oh, you can knock out freaking what's her name, Layla Ali. Come on.
So where are you right now, Dennis? Are you still over there, or are you back in the States right now?
I'm back where you can breathe the air. I'm back in the Northwest.
So what's your next venture here? I mean, when's the next time that we're going to be seeing you around?
See, right now there's talk about a Super Fight League. It's going to try to bring their Fight League concept to the U.S. That's a possibility. I know that they're going to go back at the end of this year to India. I hope I'm a part of that. A lot of the Indian guys are just really, it's really easy to take a liking to. So I have a good bond with a good group of guys over there that I enjoy coaching. So go from there.
Well, what we like and, to do. Kind of just... I'm sorry, Dennis.
I said just kind of see where the world will take me.
So what we like to do at this point in the interview, we got the live open chat room. If anyone's got a question for you in there. And then, of course, Ted, you got anything for Dennis?
Well, I got to ask Dennis about the Speedo. Because I got to ask you this, Dennis. I you've probably been through it a million times, but and I think it was UFC 133. You wore a Speedo, and Dana White was pissed off at that. But you said you lost a bet. What was the bet over?
I'm not at liberty to say that, but I'll tell you what. So me and my friends are pretty crude, right? So my one buddy, if he would have lost, you know, there's a 69-year-old woman that he was going to have to procure.
Oh, come on.
Lucky I'm the guy that lost.
All right. Well, that, you know, that puts it in perspective.
Yeah. So you know why I had to do it, because I would have made for sure him do it.
That was awesome.
All right. Fair enough. So Dennis, are you officially retired or you're settled in as a coach, or do you ever think that you might get back in the cage? I mean, because we've seen guys have a career resurgence, you know, in their 40s.
Yeah. I mean, I just turned 41. See, the night before at weigh-ins that I fought, John Fitch tore my bicep, but, you know, they brought me in as a replacement for that guy. And, So I wasn't going to and I never got my bicep. It tore like it was a partial tear. So it's actually, I'll give you a little sample here. So I don't know if you can see it. No, you probably can't even tell.
Well, we can actually only see your photograph. For some reason, the video is not coming through.
My video is coming through, and there's a little cartoon picture of Evil Eddie, but I can see.
that's how it is.
But I mean, I just wasn't able to train, and I was still, you know, trying to fight, and you know, my mind was in a different place, so I was kind of just burned out on fighting pretty much. And lately, you know, it's kind of going to Indian training, those guys kind of put a little fire under me. I'm gonna try to do some grappling tournaments and see how that goes, see how my body holds up, and you know, continue to eat right, because I have celiac disease, and And it's harder to eat right than it is to train as a professional fighter, man. I'll tell you, cutting out gluten and doing all sorts of crazy stuff is more difficult than training, which is not an easy thing either. But I'm gonna try to just see how the things roll. Definitely gonna do some more grappling first, but I'd like to fight. I don't want to go out. I mean, I lost a bunch of fights to guys that, you know, are not on my level. You know, there's a. But it is what it is. They were better those days, but it's kind of a hard thing to accept. You know, that getting old and understanding that if you're not hungry, you know, that hungrier guy is gonna steal your lunch. And so, right. But if I can get that back through grappling first, then yeah, I'd like to fight. I'd like to fight somebody. I'd like to actually fight in the Super Fight League. Just to, I don't know, maybe go over there and make my mark over there before I'm done. I fight everywhere else that I could fight, so it'd be kind of cool to fight over there.
Nice. Hey, Dennis. By the way, I wanted to let you know about Ann Hill. She's one of our fans, or one of our friends. She's more than a fan. She's a friend, and she lives in Oregon. So she really loves the Pacific Northwest, and so she wanted to say hi to you.
Well, hello, Ann. Thanks for saying hi, and. The air here, I'm telling you guys, if you haven't been up here, the air here is, after being in India, in New Delhi, India, the most polluted city in the world, where if you go outside without a gas mask or like a little, cloth mask around, by the end of the day, you'll have black boogers in your nose.
Wow.
So going from that back to the purest air, I'm not joking, man, back to the purest air of the world up here in the Northwest, and man, it makes me want to bottle this air up and bring it down there and share it with those guys.
That's
it's good to be home.
That's quite a thing, some black boogers at the end of the day. That's serious. I would freak out.
Yeah. No thanks.
Yeah, dude, just from being outside, man. Just from being outside.
Wow.
Hey, you should have the guys from India come over to the United States and train with you.
What do you think? I got that going up. We got that rolling on right now. I got a couple guys that are working on getting their visas.
Oh, nice.
Oh, nice.
Yep.
So what we like to do at this point. I'm sorry, Dennis.
Go ahead.
So
they get to drink some clean water when they get here. But go ahead, Evil Eddie.
There you go. So what we like to do at this point in the interview is we hand the imaginary microphone over to you. If you have any sponsors, any shout-outs, anything you want to get on the table to let listeners and, of course, your fans know about, the floor is all yours now.
You know, I don't really have much to say. I mean, this is I like to thank God because he's you know, the maker of all of us, but. Other than that, I just hope everybody, you know, understands that we try our hardest and do our best, and you know, that's what will make you happy. If you strive to be what the best at something, that nothing can really stop you from doing that except for yourself.
I love that. I'll take that to heart.
Yep. Yeah. Thanks, Dennis. Yeah, that was great, and yeah, we appreciate everything that you've done over the years with your fight career, for sure. You know, putting it out there in the cage as many times as you have. I mean, I think 70 more than 70 fights. That's pretty amazing.
Yeah, man. I probably have like 30 on there that aren't even marked. Same with Josh Barnett. Like, Josh got a bunch. Like all of us guys in the Northwest, we were fighting. We have so many more fights than they have on their little. On their little sure dog stuff, but yeah, it's it was different fights back then too. Like I fought this kid Lee Remedios one time. We were allowed to kick in the balls. I booed that kid so hard in the balls just because. We were
oh my god!
He ended up fighting in the UFC actually too.
Yeah, that's right. I remember that guy from some years ago. Lee Remedios.
Yeah, yeah. Him and I fought in some little underground warehouse in Canada, and we were allowed to boo in the balls. And I was like, I got to do this. Because we're allowed.
Just because you can.
Yeah.
Funny. That's awesome.
That one moment in life you were like, yeah, go for it. All right, man. So thank you so much for coming on Evil Intoxicated. We wish you the best of your journey that you got going on. And we really appreciate you coming on. So have a great night and a great future.
Yeah, thanks, Dennis.
Thanks, guys.
Make sure you guys subscribe down below here and also Pure Evil MMA on iTunes and Podbean.com. We do the show live every Wednesday night. I'm Evil Eddie from FrontProofMedia.com. That's Ted Check, and we're out.